All right. Hey, guys. How you doing? This is Sean Woodsy of City of Coaches Podcast. Got a special guest today, Coach Lanice Stallings over at Wiley College. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I can't complain at all. Now, how's Mississippi going for you? Because you're in Mississippi right now, right?
Yeah. Mississippi is great. The weather is great. Some businesses are opening, but I don't leave the house much but other than to work out. So I love it. It's great.
That's good. So you're over at Wiley College. Those of you know me, I spent a short stint at Wiley College, small town, Marshall, Texas. Because you got a nice little experience under your belt, man. You got the D1 experience too under your belt in the coaching as a player. Yeah. You spent time at Tennessee State, Mississippi Valley State. You were coaching player there, right?
Yes,
so,
sir.
So I have to ask you, so when you graduated from being a player, what made you wanted to go into being a graduate assistant or be a coach?
You know, my last year of my senior season, I was shooting in the gym, and I was just like, man, like, is this it? Like, am I about to be done with basketball? And something was just, I wanted to be around it still. And so I really don't know where that came from, because my dad is a coach. So he's been a coach all my life, and I didn't want any parts of coaching. I majored in biology and I wanted to be in the hospital. I wanted to go to medical school. And so I remember what goal I was on. I was by myself. I was always by myself in the gym shooting, and I was just like, I'm not ready to hang it up. And I knew I wasn't going to go play overseas because I had a daughter. So I don't know. It went from there. I told my coach at the time that I wanted to coach, and he helped me get back in. He's the one who brought me back as a grad assistant at Valley.
Well, obviously you made the right decision, because you got like a little history on your belt. I have to stop you because I want to rewind real quick, because I don't really know anybody from Mississippi that I can hope. But obviously you got the resume for it, and you wasn't an implant. You actually came raised from Mississippi. What's the city you're from again?
Hattiesburg.
What's the population of Hattiesburg?
You know, it's not country. Well, I don't know what people call country anymore, but like, there's a mall, and then there's a little strip mall. There's, you know what? The only thing we don't have that I say we need is a Dave and Buster's.
Okay.
The only thing, but like, there's restaurants, there's places to go. Like, it's a zoo. So it's not Nashville, but it's enough for me.
That's where you're from. It's home, right? So it's more comfortable. Yeah. So you're saying it's not a small city, but obviously it's not one of the popular cities like that, stuff like that. So being a D1 recruit, what got you there? What got you even a scholarship offer? Like, what did you have coming out? Like, people need to know about this Mississippi stuff, because I ain't gonna lie, I feel ignorant right now, but I'm gonna ask you. So let's go.
First of all, it's so many people coming from Mississippi. I went to Hattiesburg High School, and we were 5A at the time, which was the highest class, now in 6. And they went up to 6A, but then they went back down to 5A. This was a really big school. Like, we had people going from the baseball team to major leagues.
Yes, that's true.
Signed D1, basketball players signed. Like, D1 is not a big deal at Hattiesburg High. Like, it's just a thing. And so my sister is what brought me to Mississippi Valley. I mean, they recruited me, but she had, she was playing there before I was. So she graduated high school in 2008 and went to Valley. And so for me, it wasn't really much of a process. Like, I knew I wanted to play with her. We went to the championship. It was called the Big House. In Mississippi, it's called the Big House, but it's a tournament. Mm-hmm. So we made it to the second round her senior year, and I remember we had an interview, and I was just like, man, this was the last game that I played with my sister. And so I was like, I'm going to Valley because I get to play with her again. So that's what brought me here. I had other offers, and now that I've been around coaching, I realized that I had bigger offers, but I'm so glad, you know, I chose Mississippi Valley. I'm so glad they chose me and they gave the opportunity, because – for me, basketball wasn't like, there was no, I love basketball. I literally only played because my daddy played and he coached. And then my sister played. And then there was no quitting. My daddy was like, once you start something, because My thing was to get an academic scholarship so that I wouldn't have to play basketball, but I still wanted to play with her, and obviously I guess I was a little good at it. So
that's how humblest.
Yeah, it was never about a D1 process. Like, it's so different now. But it was never about any of that. I just wanted to play with my sister again. So that's why I chose.
It sounds like you had a great opportunity, great career at the high school level as well. You spent time as a player at the Valley as well. So you pretty much knew the walls for 8 years, pretty much? Oh, your sister did how many years? Yeah.
Well, she did like 1.5. So she didn't stay there and graduate. But yeah, I knew the ins and outs. When the coaches, especially when a new coach came after the coach who brought me in left, I knew, you know, who to talk to about financial aid, academics. Mm-hmm. Like, there was nothing. And then if I didn't know, it was like, okay, look, I went to school here. You know, this is Valley. So I need to know. So it was fun knowing all of those things, all the tricks and trades to get kids, you know, to make the most of their opportunity.
Well, that makes total sense, though. So, like I said, we already told you were assistant at Valley. So how did Tennessee State come around? Because it's like you're just moving up in the world. Like, so you get over at Tennessee State. So what was the difference? Was there much difference, you know, between the Missouri?
You know what? I think every HBCU has those HBCU things. But yeah, it was very different. But the coach who came my third year as a coach at Valley, she bumped me up to assistant coach. And so she kept me on staff. And then when she got the job at Tennessee State, she took me with her, Coach Jessica.
Okay.
I'm extremely thankful for that. I didn't really know what I was doing other than she wanted me to come with her. And obviously, you know, pay increase. Because Valley was my home. Like, I knew everything. They had just finished building that arena. So there was no, you know, it wasn't like a bad situation. But it was just different. OVC is a little bit, well, a lot of bit more competitive than the SWAC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it was, and I didn't know all of these things before I got there, but the athlete was a higher caliber athlete.
Of course, yeah.
I learned so much. And everywhere I go, like even at Wiley this past year, I've learned so much. But It was a no-brainer move. I just didn't know what I was getting myself into until I got there. And then, you know, you just jump out there sometimes. It's like, I'm going. And then when you leave, it's like, wow, you know, it was amazing. Like, Nashville is amazing. I don't want to live there anymore.
But yeah, but it's a good experience, right?
Yeah, man, Nashville was amazing. Coaching. Just getting around the city, because that was my first big city that I lived in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's how I got to Tennessee State.
You got to Tennessee State, and you guys did pretty decent over there at Tennessee State. So, you're a winner. So, you know, I have to ask you, you know, how did Wiley College come on your radar? You know, NAIA, you know.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Wiley reached out, and they were looking for a candidate. So I didn't really know if I was ready to be a head coach. It really wasn't a goal of mine, to be completely honest with you. It was not. Lanise did not say, yeah, I want to be a head coach when people asked me, you know, what was my end goal in coaching. I really just wanted to coach kids. That was my thing. They called, and I went through the process, just kind of going through the process. You know, I had phone interviews, and then I had it was like a Skype interview, and then I went on campus, and it kind of just kept happening. So it really didn't feel like, you know, I had become a head coach until like that first game. It's like, okay.
Hey, really?
Yeah, like, because I don't know, work is not – like, working is what I do. That one of my things is I don't want to be outworked. Like, I don't want to be outworked. I'm working out 3 times a day, but I don't want to be outworked. So when I got there and scholarships was needed to be done, paperwork needed to be done. I can't remember everything else I did, but it was just like work. Yeah, my assistant, she was good. We added another student assistant. So it was just like work. And then that first game, it's like, okay, I'm a coach. Because I've never considered myself like a good coach, or I just try to work and I don't want to be outworked.
So you were waiting your turn. Maybe you know you wasn't doing it on purpose. You're waiting your turn.
Yeah.
You know, because some people be like assistants and they think they're head coaches before they even actually been the head. So you had that experience. I have to say congrats. Obviously, your career, your graduate's degree as well as being a coach, that's going to get you further if you decide to move up in the ranks as the head coach. So speaking of that, Wiley College, it's been a while. I'm sure you guys got more money from the time I was there. So let's talk about athletes you guys get over there at Wiley College now.
You know what? We had the freshman of the year in the conference. Okay. Mm-hmm. I inherited the team. So I didn't do any recruiting. I brought in one kid, but she had already done recruiting and then they wanted to stay. So, I welcomed anybody who chooses the school, you know, that I'm at. And so there was a D1, two D1 transfers. One was already there. But it's some athletes. It's some athletes. It's some dogs. Like, you know, as you move up in the D1 world, you kind of get kids who are like finicky. I don't want that shoe. I want these type of tights. I want to roll my shorts 7 times. And you're rolling your eyes.
I got flashbacks. So go ahead.
So those kids, you know, I told them, I mean, they're still kids. They're all, you know, I told them, you know, we're not wearing lashes on the court. We're not rolling our shorts. And they finally bought in and they go hard. You know, it doesn't take a lot to please them. Although I wanted to, you know, do so much for them. They weren't needy, you know, they weren't needy at all. So I guess this type of, you know, athlete there, I know the guys, you know, were really good. The girls were good. And then the guys had a really good, I think, 2 years before I got here. So, okay. I mean, it's transfers. We get transfers, JUCO, freshmen. I recruit all, you know.
Yeah.
I want kids that want to be at Wiley.
Because you're going to get kids that's going to fall in. Even my experience as a college coach, I would get former D1 athletes that probably had grade issues or whatever or just needed a second chance or a chance at all. You know what I'm saying? It definitely sounds like that. And definitely sounds like you're building something good over there at the school. So to help people that don't know about Wiley College, what is it located? Obviously, I know where it's at, but, you know.
So it's Marshall. It's in Marshall, Texas, which is considered East Texas. Most people know where Shreveport is. So it's about, it depends on who's driving. So I'm not going to tell you how long it takes me. but it should take about 45 minutes. From Shreveport, and there's another city, Longview. I don't know if too many people know that, but it's like 30 minutes from Longview going toward Dallas. So we're just 2.5 hours from Dallas, 3 to 4 hours from Houston. I know we're close to Arkansas, but I haven't gone, so I don't know how far. But Shreveport is, most people know, and we're like 45 minutes from there.
So if you got a recruit over in Arkansas, you going?
it's only 3 to 4. I think it's like 4 hours because I drove back to Nashville, and so I drove through Arkansas, but I didn't do it again, so I just don't remember how far. I was in Shreveport all the time. I was in Dallas all the time, so I know. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're going for it. What you got coming in this year? How many did you graduate? How many seniors did you graduate this year?
So
that's going to graduate rather.
4 seniors. 2 graduated, but the other 2 will graduate. So 4 seniors leaving. Everybody's coming back. We're the 6 that stayed is coming back. And then right now we have 4 commits. I'm sorry, 5 commits and 2 on the bubble. So what was needed was a point guard. So I'm still... trying to seal that deal. But got our post player coming back, who was freshman of the year. I wasn't trying to recruit over her at all, but I did need to recruit somebody who was going to battle and make her better. And I'm not somebody who recruits and knows who I'm going to play. I would love to clear my bench every game. But it's just trust. It's a trust thing for me. And I don't have a voice to yell. I think I'm yelling, but my kids, they think it's funny. So I'm going to tell you, you know, what the goal is in practice. It's up to you to buy in. And then once we get to the game, yeah, I'm not, I see coaches that's just all up and down and screaming and hollering. I tell them I'm there to make adjustments. We have practiced, you know what to do, you know, but don't forget that you're a basketball player at the end of the day. So, yeah, we got some people who are going to make us better.
Yeah. It sounds like you said you got five. So you like to keep around the 12-13 range. You don't go all the way to 15.
Well, this is my first year. I'm sorry. This past year was my first year as a head coach because so it was my first time ever deciding.
Right, I get what you're 13. Saying.
I came in with 13, and like fourth game into the season, I had 10. So that's why I always say that's the 10 who stayed. So I noticed that teams that were beating us were playing 13 kids, 11, 12, 13 kids. And so our kids were tired. And at the beginning, we had 9 because one of my kids wasn't eligible until January, and we still won some games. But it's my job as a coach to make those type of adjustments to see, you know, what are some of the reasons that we're losing, what are some of the reasons that we're getting tired. And so I did notice that we just didn't have enough sometimes. And so that's why. Yeah, 5-2, and so it's 6 returning, so that's 7 will make 12, and then 13. Jesus, man. And I'm looking to have, you know, at least 2, you know, you get 2 who probably want to walk on or something like that. So I'm okay with 15.
It sounds like it. It does. Yeah. The reason why I asked you that, because obviously, you know, and unfortunately, we deal with grades. We deal with all kind of different things that may keep kids ineligible and stuff like that. So, you being my first active coach, a college coach on my podcast, I have to ask you, if that presented itself, grade issues, such things like that, what are some of the probationary periods you may have in place for players, stuff like that maybe have those issues? Hopefully, they never had. Hopefully, never did.
Right. Well, I really don't have to make a lot of the probationary periods because, you know, NAIA, they have to be eligible to play.
Correct.
But in terms of, like, I'm not going to say that I'm a city kid because they get an F. Like, I'm not too far removed from college. Didn't get an F, but I, you know, some kids have different things going on. You know, but if you're ineligible, we're going to go by the books. You know, I'll help you any way that I can. I tell kids to tell me early. Tutoring is mandatory. I'm sorry. Study hall is mandatory. But to let me know early if you're having issues. We haven't had any issues with kids who stayed, the 10 who stayed, and then coming into next year, Wiley redid their grading system for the virus. So nobody.
Oh, they did? They went with, they changed the semester style, or they?
No, they changed their grade. You know, the letter grades. And so they revamped that. And so nobody's going to be ineligible going in. But I did tell them, you can't just come in and, you know, you're still going to, I'm not going to sit you for an F, but you're going to run.
Right.
Because you just need to know, you know, I want you to be your best self. So we're not going to accept failure. We're not even going to accept mediocrity. But yeah, I don't really have to put kids on punishment. All of my kids were serious about academics. I preach academics.
That's definitely, it sounds like Wiley is in a good situation academically with the female side. And I know the guys get a lot of athletes. I know Coach Jay just left the year prior. So I know he has some good, academic kids and stuff like that. I know he's at New Orleans now. You know, it's very exciting to hear, you know, situation about HBCU because, you know, that is a factor. It's one of the first ones. It was crazy because they were filming The Great Debaters when I was there. They were filming it on campus. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I know it was filmed there, but I didn't know. I guess I couldn't remember what year, and I guess I didn't put two and two together when you say you were there. I want to watch that movie again just because I've been all over campus now and just see what I can see in the movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely, I'd like to see Denzel and Journey Smollett and all them, and the Forest Whitaker as well, and stuff like that. So it's actually kind of cool. So like, yeah, I'm about to fly down to Marshall, Texas. It's a long drive from Houston. What airport are you flying to now?
Shreveport, I mean, Louisiana? I've flown out of Shreveport, but most of the time I go to Dallas.
Okay. That makes sense. It's not too far. I was just in Texas a couple weeks ago, actually. Coronavirus. So it has to get fun now, right? That's the whole reason why the show. Okay. So shortly, your coaching style. What we got? What you got going on?
I'm screaming at the top. No, I'm kidding. running. I want us to outrun. Practice has to be, brutal. But I want us to outrun teams defensively.
So you're like up and down. You have like positionless basketball. I love the women's game. I love the women's game so much. I can never coach it, but I love it so much. It's the best. It's a fundamentals basis. I just love it as a coach. I just watch it. I remember when I was coach, I would watch some women games just to get some inspiration. So, definitely. So, like, I feel like I interrupt your answer. Do you play positions basketball pretty much? Or
I'm not going to say positionless, but that might be what it's called. But I want everybody to be able to take one and two dribbles. Like, dribble, don't shoot. Like, I want my big girls working on their three. If we look at your form and we see that you can hit it, yeah, I've run plays for them to shoot a three. So, I mean, I guess that's a yes. I've never really heard that positionless basketball. My point guard is my point guard, but I want one through three, maybe even four, to be able to start the transition. Like, I don't want my point guard. We're waiting for the point guard every play, and that keeps going up and down. But, yeah, so I guess you would say that.
Yeah, it's like it's what I'm saying is like a loose communication. Of course, the center is not going to bring the ball to the court, but they'll outlet that rebound quick, right, out to one of the wings or something like that to get get in motion. That's what we say in position. It's like you're not just walking the ball up the court and then just dumping it to the paint, which is fun sometimes. Obviously, if you got the body for it,
right. Now, I've had to play that ball because nobody could do anything with my big girl. Like I say, she got freshman of the year. She almost averaged a double-double, but I know in the tournament she averaged a double-double. Like, her highest was, like, 17 rebounds. Like, nobody could do anything. And she was a freshman. So,
might be out of there soon, Coach.
She has told me that she wants to be at Wiley. And so, I don't
think you're going to take her word for it, right?
Right. That's right.
So, obviously you've been around some great staff. You know the game a lot. So, give me some coaches that have been your inspiration during your journey. That's coaching style. Not necessarily as a player, but someone that you look to as a coach, their coaching style.
I'm really close with Coach Enoch, Ronnie Enoch. He's at Syracuse right now. We met at Valley. And I can talk to him about anything coaching because he's been around, I don't know how many years. He's older than me. I'll probably say I'm closest with him. He hasn't been a head coach, but he's been around. So he knows.
Syracuse, I mean, they ain't letting nobody go. Go somewhere else.
He has been around. He has taught me so much. We say style, but like I needed help with recruiting. I couldn't recruit more than two or three kids at a time.
Right. Yeah.
And I went for the kid who I went for. So even if Houston or, UConn, not UConn, but if, I still went for kids, because it was the relationship piece. He taught me about the most important the most effective thing was the recruiting piece. So as far as style of play, I liked Coach Robinson. I played for him my senior year, and then I coached under him, and he was mellow. Like, he didn't know, and there was no do this and then do this. He would teach a play, and it's like you move out of it. You know, you do move out of it. Obviously, I learned from Coach Kern, just working under her. And I met so many coaches based, you know, just to get the networking piece and the relationship piece. But I have watched a lot of basketball that I don't correlate to coach. I have watched, I remember watching Gonzaga men, no idea who the coach was, but I was watching Gonzaga. I was watching BYU men. I watched South Carolina, obviously Coach Staley, but as a coach, we teach things and I've learned that like what they do might not be what you taught, you know, it might not be
the system. Yeah.
Right. It might not be what you wanted them to run. And so that's why I don't really correlate what I saw with the coach. And maybe I should do more of that because I watch a lot of basketball and I definitely try to network, but I ask those questions that can help me become a better coach, like specifics. Coach Q at Syracuse, when I can sit him down, I ask him specifically, okay, when a team is, because he's a coach who wants to outscore. So I'm like, okay, so, you know, you like this zone, but if the team is hitting threes, like, what's your adjustment? Like, that's my thing. And so I guess that's a style of play. But coaches that have had conversations with me know I will sit you down and be like, look, I'm serious right now. I need you to answer. And so I just take little nuggets from anybody. And Coach Enoch has a lot to do with that because he puts me in front of a lot of people. He knows so many people. But he puts me in front of a lot of people. Patrick Mashuda is an AD now, but he was a coach, my mentor. And so I talked to him about a lot of the specifics. So yeah, I don't think I know I didn't answer your question. My dad is a coach too. So I've been around basketball all my life. Like he played JUCO basketball after I was born because he went to the military. So he was 30 playing with guys 18 and 19 years old. And so, you know, I've learned so much from him. And I can't tell you what his style is. I just, I take little things and it's like, okay, let me try this. Or but it's so many people who I would have to thank if I get on another podium.
Right. And you will, obviously. You're going to keep striving your career. So it sounds like people that's been close to you, I mean, it's like what else, you asked a question but already knew the answer because you've already mentioned these people already, so it's already there. So, yeah, you're inspired by the people that's been affected, that has affected your life so far in this journey in coaching. So that totally makes sense. So here's another question. You know, I don't know if you're into WNBA or not. Are you into WNBA at all?
Yeah.
All right. So I have to ask you this question because you're my first woman current coach. I had a woman coach prior who coached prior before. Okay. So if you had five players in the WNBA that you can coach that actually would play together, can you name those players? That would be
a coach.
Yes, not just play with them, that you can actually think your system that you created will work good with them.
I thought you were going to ask me for my favorite five. You know, I grew
your favorite color? Is that what you want?
No, I thought you were going to ask me my favorite five.
Oh, okay.
Now, I grew up in the Cynthia Cooper era, but doesn't mean I want to coach her, you know?
All right. So we'll go Cynthia Cooper. What else we got? Like players that you would.
Okay. I would say Cynthia Cooper, Breonna Stewart.
Ooh, that's a good one, too. Pick and roll. Yeah, like that.
She's so versatile. Ooh. Ooh. You know what? I don't know if I can have both of these on the same team, but Sue Bird. Coop played point guard when she
played. Coop could just hold her suit. She could shoot, so that's your two.
But she played point.
But you can move her over for Coop though, for sure. That ain't even a question.
So those three, I need a big man. I played against this girl, and I'm terrified of her. I should probably say Brittany Griner. And probably I'm thinking of a four. I can't say. Can I say Asia Wilson? Are they gonna run into each other?
No, Asia will run out the way of Brittany for sure. And Brittany, she's gonna stay in the block. She does. I watch her play.
Asia can move around. Yeah,
I see her play. I mean, I go to the games all the time, the Brittany games. So I definitely see. Brittany will stay in the post. So Asia, she can move around, no problem.
I guess I would say them and not like double. But it's so many that I love.
Yeah,
watching
the game is evolving too.
You said what?
The game is evolving, getting more respect. Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting better contracts now. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you would have tried. They had this type of money now. I bet you would have tried at least once. So, well, I have to ask it that because you know that's very important when you know you keep these young ladies involved and you know you see you know the coach. I'm like, all right, well, who worked this year? You know, this Last Dance doc. So, who's your favorite basketball in general all time? Basketball player.
Women or men?
Men, all doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's difficult for me, and I want to go back to and say another coach is Coach Armenti Price. Well, I forgot her married name, but she is one that I ask a lot of questions by. So, but my favorite, I'm a woman, and I like men, so I hate. Say the name because I'm supposed to have a woman as my favorite player, right?
Why is that? No, it's 2020. It's like
so Rajon Rondo is my guy.
Oh my god, Rajon
but
Rondo,
it has
huh?
evolved. Like it started out with AI. Mm-hmm. So it was AI, then it was Tracy McGrady, and then it was Dwayne Wade. And now it's Rajon Rondo.
I feel like you see yourself in a lot of those players, right?
Yeah.
So that's where it's at. That's where we get it, right?
Rondo can't shoot, but I have played point guard.
He facilitate unbelievably. A great facilitator. You know, I think if they had like a couple more years in Boston prior with the big three, they probably would have won at least two more.
That's when I started liking him. So... Yeah.
And he's still a floor general. He did okay with the Pelican, too, over there for that one season. So, you know, Rondo definitely.
Lakers was going to win it all. And I've never been a Laker fan, ever. Mm-hmm. But I was going to be a Laker fan this year.
You're going to be a Laker fan for Rondo or just in general? Well, I mean, you know, you have to ask the question because a lot of people are like, I got my favorite. But then you're like, well, who you got the favorite player that you would want to be on the court with you? Don't really ask that question, so I thank you for answering that question. So, you know, obviously the Last Dance documentary just came out, and I'm not going to actually give me a breakdown on that because that's irrelevant. It's over with. So if you had your choice, what two players you would want to make a long 10-part documentary on? I say Cheryl Miller, but other people, you know, I think HBO just did something on her recently.
Cynthia Cooper. Mm-hmm. And that's because I've read her book. Cynthia Cooper and probably
Cheryl Swoops. Just put them together.
Coaches now. She's in my field. I'm just trying to think of people and Cynthia Cooper coaches too, but it's so many things that people don't know. She wrote, you know, she says it in her book, but I love a story. I love a good story. I love somebody who overcame adversity. And I know all of us have. I know a little bit about hers, just reading her book. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, probably Ray Allen. That's my favorite.
Okay, Ray Allen. Yeah, okay. You know, his would be good because no one really knows anything.
Because he's so quiet.
Yeah, you don't know any. I mean, he's been popping up on Instagram now, but outside of that, you really don't know anything. Like, he's popping up. He be in Iceland, like, fishing and stuff now. Like, he really enjoying his retirement day. Yeah. So, you know, you have him on.
Like, family-oriented coaches. Like, coaches, and it's like, people, coaches have husbands and kids. I'm like, I want to see the family. You know, I'm into that.
It's a package deal, right?
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, as we talk pre-production, like, now, that could be very interesting going down that road, and, you know, it's a good success for some people, and some people it's not. I have to ask you, since, you know, you literally have had this long, I'm going to tell you right now, I like your resume, okay? I love your resume. I love everything, you know, from, you know, being a graduate assistant to being an assistant at two Division I colleges and deciding to go into Wyatt College, NAIA. And obviously, you have a long future ahead of yourself. You're still young, bright, smart, nice. You just finished your first year at Wiley. You feel like you had an okay season, right? You feel like you had a good season. You got some development players, stuff like that. For sure. You know, with this Zoom stuff going on, and I say Zoom stuff, but I meant like you know, coronavirus and stuff like that. Like, how are you handling recruits, and like, how are you handling your current players? And one other question before I let you take over, like, you know, how do you feel it's going to affect the beginning of the season?
So it was very important for us to try to live life as normal as possible when they were let go, like told to go home back in, what, March? Yeah. It was very important for us to, like, meet every week. My assistants and I, we were talking to kids every day. We were having and then they had to check in to work out. Like, you got to let me know when you start and let me know when you finish. And periodically, which was a lot, I would say, what'd you do? You know, so it was very important for us to finish through the year like we were on campus. So they were still meeting for their classes. You know, I told them what grades were acceptable and what were not, even with this grade policy change. So that was important to just not let them go and be like, all right, fend for yourself, you know. So we got on Zoom and we talked about academics. We talked about, you know, how you can get better. How's your mouth time? You know, what are you working on? But we also talked about hair. Like, you know, girls can't get their hair done, you know, unless you know your hair. We talked about nails. We talked about family members and how this was affecting everybody. So that was important. Mental awareness is important. And I don't call myself, like, I'm not educated enough on it to, like, lead, you know, different sessions or talk about different things, but I try to just be available. Like, prayer is my weapon. So, you know, for people that know me, you know, you can call me with a problem, but I'm probably just gonna, one, listen, and two, pray. Most of the time, it's not, well, you should. I can't stand when people tell me or tell other people what they should do. It's just like, no, pray about it. Did you pray about it? Did you get it from God? Because don't. But anyway, that's my God rant.
Ain't nothing wrong with it. Do your thing.
So that's that was important for us to do, and we stayed on it. And then you asked about recruiting in the spirit. It never stopped. Most of the recruits I knew before the virus happened. I got to watch most of them play. Even if they came to Wiley for a tryout, you know, came to work out, or just film, I got to see all of them play. So we had already established a relationship before the virus hit. So it was just about them committing when they wanted to. So, you know, they started committing. And for me, when people kept asking, it was just life. The only thing that I wasn't doing was going to the office.
Right.
That's the thing people don't understand about coaches. A lot of times we ain't in the office a lot in the off season anyway, unless you got a boss who's like, yeah, you're here from 9 to 5. Like, you're, you know, D1, you're working on camps and stuff like that. But so much of that stuff you can work, you can do at home.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, I know most people outside of the season, they're like 4 to 5 hours in the office. Yeah. So we were watching film, you know, we're still watching film, getting better. We're still meeting. We're still recruiting. Like, nothing stopped. The only thing that stopped was physically going in the office. And like, I can't say, well, D1 to NAI recruiting is different, right? D1, you got this mass budget to go everywhere.
Yes, you do.
10 states in July. I wasn't doing that anyway this year. So, you know, yeah, obviously July changed. I would have probably gone to 2 major ones, but you just don't have the budget to mass recruit. Right. If it's coming out of, you know, Stalin's pockets, I'm just not, you know.
No, I've been there. Trust me, I know.
That budget is not to go to 10 states in July. So, we were probably going to go to about 2 tournaments in July. So that's why I say it hasn't changed much.
Anyway, because it's like you head into your summer season too. So it hasn't changed too much yet.
Right.
You know,
I think from the perspective of community, in terms of like seeing people, I think it hit us hard. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're talking to everybody through a screen. I remember telling people like, you need to come see me. You know, it was big to like to see people, to touch people. Like that's a big deal for me when I don't go too far where I can't come see my parents. They come see me coach. They come see, you know, so that family, you know, community piece is important. And then the last question, I can't remember.
Oh, you did cover it. You covered the last question. Yeah, it was basically how you're doing with like, what are you going to do into the next season? Like, once you guys get the ball, physically get the ball going, like, what's your first? What is preseason like?
You know what? I am curious. I think that I've seen some talks of canceling the fall, and I said this to another coach, like, I honestly wouldn't mind if we just play conference as long as we have a vaccine. You know, we just play our conference games. We would start behind, but everybody's starting behind. Like, well, you got to keep your kids engaged. Everybody has to keep their kids engaged. You know, like, there is no upper hand when it comes to, okay, we're cutting everything out except conference this year. Okay. But I have no idea. Like, they're still talking about July tournaments, and it's just like, I've seen we're going to have this infrared thing that you're going to walk under, check your temperature. But then somebody said, so if a player has a fever, are you going to, you know, escort the whole team out? They said no. And so for me, the virus is serious because my dad has a weak immune system. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm not going. I don't go many places.
You don't want to risk your relatives in that matter.
Right. Well, yeah. So I can only imagine other people. Then I have a 7-year-old. Like, nothing is that important. Not nothing. We need to be at home reading our Bibles and, you know, talking to Jesus anyway. So I'm very curious. I'm anxious almost, even though the Bible says don't be anxious, to see what's going to happen because mm-hmm. You know, I want to see how much people care about people all the while still, you know, participating in this competitive sport that we all love, mm-hmm. You know, that we all live by. By no means do I want it to wipe it out. I still want it to be fun, but like, I don't want to be in practice with a mask on.
Right. I get it. Totally. I mean, I went to the gym today with a mask on. I was like, yo, I'm about to really work out forever with a mask on. I had to hit you real quick. You mentioned your daughter. She says she's 7, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She like, was it, does basketball look like it's in her life? What is her situation? Yeah.
She's 7. And so the people who have 7-year-olds know they're into everything. But she's tall. So she's always been like in the 90 percentile for her age. She's a slim thing, but she was into gymnastics. She's really good at flipping off of anything, jumping into splits, like cartwheels, roundoffs. And I enjoyed watching her do that because she enjoyed it. But lately, she has wanted to do basketball. Obviously, a basketball family. My dad coaches. My sister played. And then my little brother, who's graduating high school, he just finished playing. So she's around it all the time. Her dad plays basketball. So she's gotten into basketball. But then, like, since we've been here, she's into soccer. And then she walked with us to go work out. She, you know, she got up to 4 laps today. So, you know, it looks like she can run track, but I don't, whatever she wants to do, I'm going to allow her to do, but I'm not doing any basketball lessons.
You say it loud. Once they start showing that interest at you, well, hold on, you actually can.
No, my brother, like, she'll go to the gym with my dad and my brother, and they have like sessions, like.
Right. Like, cause you have your support system. Yeah.
When we was doing soccer, and the little bit that I know about sports, I'm like, y'all be your knees, y'all slide your feet. Well, I had to say it like 7 times, like, I was bumped off the field. Like, no. And I said, this is why I don't want to, because I don't want to mess up our relationship. Like, I value parenting. I value, you know, that I've been given this opportunity to parent, you know, regardless of how it came about, doing things I had no business doing. This relationship is important to me. The second most important relationship to me, besides my relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to fail at that either. Like, not being outworked, not failing, that's in every aspect of my life, not just basketball, not just coaching, people. I don't want to fail with people.
I'm definitely excited, Coach. I know, you know, with your experience, I don't know, with me and women coaches or women coaches or parents, like, I just wait for y'all books. I just wait for you guys to write that book. You know, I just wait for it because, like I said, most of my coaching inspiration comes from women coaches and stuff like that. Just because of the style, the intimacy, like the communication, how you may deal with trials and tribulations, stuff like that. I feel like women coaches have the opportunity to really create a real bond that lasts for a long time. You know, I think my older sister still calls her college coach to this day. She graduated college almost 19 years ago. So, you're going to have younger ladies contacting you for sure. You know, definitely want to thank you for the opportunity for you coming on the podcast, talking to me, giving us some information. I'm definitely look forward to see what's going on, what you got coming this season. I'm actually about to come out now. I got to come out now. I got to come out because I got to see what you got going on. I got to see. Definitely the world gets to see, and definitely take an opportunity to put the HBCU, let people know that HBCUs are out here running. It's not just Howard. It's not just some of the big name HBCUs. Obviously, it's hundreds of us across the country and stuff like that. And Coach, obviously I see you being safe in Mississippi and stuff like that. And I want to say thank you for coming on. Thank you guys. That was the City Coaches Podcast with Coach Stallings. I really appreciate you so much. I look forward to you guys. You know, if you guys have any questions, reach out. Coach, can you give me a handle? I mean, do you have any social media, anything like that? Like, for the public.
Yeah, my Twitter is my name. I'll use my name, so it's Lanice Stallings. I think my Twitter is Coach L Stallings. My Instagram is Coach L Stallings, but it's not. I'm not really on social media.
Well, everybody do their Googles. You'll find Coach very easily. I found you very like that. So obviously, somebody got you in the right place. Definitely, Coach. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
No problem.